I have no idea how so many podcasts get away with using the actual or written music for that show.
Do they use it? I mean, there is some kind of like, there is a thing that you can do that's like, if you're discussing something or talking about it, like if we were going to do like the Song Exploder thing where we wanted to talk about, you know, some awesome.
Because it's for educational purposes.
Yeah.
It's
and you're like, kind of you're like, plus we're, yeah, it's fair use because we're talking about it or whatever, but okay. I don't know.
Hmm. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. But then on the other hand, I saw Marco responding to, you know, that show I like, Technology Innovations, but like he just got dinged on YouTube for like a pretty old video, because of including some like a tiny snippet of music in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's really weird. It's strange like what people go through, the acrobatics people go through. But anyways, dun 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 dun, dun. Please don't sue us.
I don't think they can sue for you humming it.
So there's an exception for humming.
Yeah.
Is that a Lawrence Lessig thing?
I think so.
Mm-hmm. God's glasses are tiny. So hey, everybody, welcome to Back to Work After Dark.
This is it. First one in a while.
I'm your co-host, Merlin Mann, and here to bring you the man sitting on the Iron Throne in Austin, Texas, it's Dan Benjamin.
Hi.
Hey.
How y'all doing?
Hi. Hi.
Today we're going to be talking about Game of Thrones. Season 8, episode 3.
If I was a Khaleesi, I'd shoot myself with fire. Dracarys.
I was very, very excited and nervous about this episode coming. And
this is just for historical sake. We're talking about Game of Thrones, the HBO show, Game of Thrones, season 8, episode 3, which aired this last Sunday across. Yes, and it's the third episode of a 5-episode season. Yeah, so tell me what your thoughts were going in.
Well, I mean, I knew that this was supposed to be a very big, epic battle episode.
Oh, sorry. I apologize so much. This is going to be absolutely unapologetically full of spoilers that will spoil the entire series, because we do necessarily need to talk about things that happened a long time ago. So, you know, if you don't care and just are here for the, you know, for the video games and the pizza, that's fine. But FYI, we're going to spoil the living shit out of this.
Yeah, it's going to be. Okay. Yeah. So if you haven't seen all of the episodes, including episode 3 of season 8, get out of here. Go watch them all, because we're going to ruin everything. If you're one of those people who like, well, I don't care about the show.
Yeah.
I imagine you'll be entertained just hearing the soothing sounds.
And you probably
of our
haven't, you know, as somebody who's not interested and like has heard a lot about it, you're probably actively seeking more content about the thing you don't watch. So welcome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
coming into E3.
I knew this was going to be one of those big epic battle episodes. And how many have we had before this? Two big ones?
Two episodes of the big battles.
Big battles.
We were texting this morning about the big battles. And like I said to you, the two, well, there's been a bunch. I mean, there's certainly memorable scenes. You got the Reigns of Castamere and the Red Wedding. But to me, the two most memorable ones are Hardhome, where they fight. They're trying to get the wildlings out. And that's the first time we see that the Night King can bring people back to life, which is stunning. And a wonderful, wonderful episode. And then the one called Battle of the Bastards.
Yes.
Which is just like, I think it took 3 months off my life watching that.
Well, were you stressed out?
And they're all, that and this were all directed by the same fella whose name escapes me. But apparently he is renowned in the Game of Thrones world for being the guy who shoots the ones that have crazy battle scenes. So when people saw that he was directing,
they knew
this one episode. Yeah, people had a pretty good idea that this would be, you know, one of the mic drop fight episodes. And it comes on the heels. I mean, we should say it comes on the heels of episode 2, which was somewhat unusual to me for the show, because it really felt like, I don't know, well, you know, one last time, you know, Hamilton. It really felt like, oh boy, there's a lot of people meeting and talking and catching up, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and the emphasis there on a lot of people, like some of their catch ups were very limited, but like, let's be honest, you could basically see very much who you could predictably expect to be dead probably in the next episode.
A lot of people were going to die. That's what we knew.
Brienne, Tormund, maybe not Davos, but like you could peg Jorah Mormont. You could just go, oh, that guy's so dead. Like, but a lot of our friends that we love, Lyanna Mormont, they're all like running around. You're like, who's going to make it out of this next episode? And of course, then you enter into an episode like this, like for me on Tenterhooks, going like, you know, who's going to die? How are they going to handle that?
Right.
Knowing that,
right.
You know, eclipsed perhaps only by The Walking Dead in terms of like, we are willing to kill anybody anytime. That is our ethos, right?
I'm trying to remember the last time that. Okay, so let's take a step back first.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple things that we should mention just about this season in general. And one of those is this is the first time, maybe since like the first episode, that we have actually seen all of these characters together in one place, with the exception of all of the Cersei and the, yeah. Which, but it sounds like they're on their way. So, but
like Cersei's brothers are there.
They're there. Like everyone's there.
The party has come to Winterfell.
Right. And so now you have all of them together, but the downside of that is you also know that mm-hmm. some or all of them potentially will die.
Mm-hmm.
And so you go into this.
Well, unless you're down in the crypts where it's safe.
Well, and that's the whole thing is like, I was thinking about that the whole time.
They kept saying it over and over and you're like,
oh, the crypts, they'll be safe. I'm like, no, they won't. That's where the dead people are.
Even a medium grade fan like me was like, what are you talking about? Like you just made a tomb with a lot more people in it. That's insane.
It's so stupid. And
yeah, but you knew that. I mean, and knowing what they're facing, because like it's funny because we, the audience, I think are very naturally, for a number of reasons, on Jon Snow's side, where like he's really seen some stuff. Like he's been through this. He's seen at Hardhome and beyond. Now he's seen what these folks are capable of, and it's more than just some like notional like mythical threat from whatever 1,000 years ago thought to be extinct, or you know, old wives tale, whatever. But like, no, this is a very like clear and present danger. And like, how do we in this case like convince Dany and later Cersei, how do we convince them of what's at stake here, which is not that you're simply facing a very difficult and powerful enemy, but every one of the people that enemy kills will at their will turn into another soldier for them. And you really have to think about what that, the scale of that, the logarithmic scale of all your friends, like turning into like zombie warriors.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the whole thing is that along this whole thing, anyone that dies is now a playing for the other side.
Like it's funny because there's, I was trying to talk to my kid who knows more about the show than she should. And like explaining why the Golden Company, if you play any D&D, you know that there's a lot to loyalty. Like if you hire a mercenary army, in any world, but especially in like D&D, they do not have necessarily a high level of loyalty. Right, they may not die for you. They will go and fight for you, but they are not going to want to die for you, and they're not going to be loyal in necessarily the most difficult circumstances. Whereas this guy has walking skeletons that will fall on a fire just because he said so.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, okay. So There's a lot here. I also want to address before we get too far into. Well, I don't know how to do this. I mean, it's an after dark, so we can do whatever we want. But
we can't. I mean, but they. So here's the way. I mean, one way that they said. There's a couple things that were somewhat implicit in how they set this up. I think, you know, on purpose. Where of course, I think I said this in text to you. Also, we've been texting a lot about this.
Yeah.
You know, it's part of this is when you set up a show like this, as with something like say Doctor Who or Lost or any kind of a show where everything matters, or it feels like everything matters. Mm-hmm. And like when you're, you know, there are very, in a show like this, especially with fans that are this attached to the material and the connections and what this screenshot means, mm-hmm. and all that kind
right,
of stuff.
Right.
Like you are, it's not their fault. As Marco says, it's not their fault, but it is their problem. Mm-hmm. They have now set up an expectation that it's going to continue to be meaningful and have big payoffs. If Jaime Lannister goes to the trouble of coming to Winterfell on his own, defying his sister wife, the Queen, so that he can fight for Winterfell and with Brienne, if that sets up an idea that he will have a crucially important role in that
right,
battle.
Right.
Let alone that he might die in doing so.
Right.
Like, there's been so much setup, and I feel like, mostly paid off. But no, but there's a huge setup. Like, Jaime Lannister, you know, could be the hero of this. Like, he's certainly not going to be just another guy swinging a sword in the dark. Like, he's going to have a huge role in this, right? We know, like, Brienne's probably going to die. Tormund's probably going to die.
Right.
Like, all these people that we like, you know, she got her big Sir Brienne moment, and you're like, oh, that's it. That's like
right,
on a reality show, when the black guy talks about how he misses home. You're like, no, he's gone.
Right.
You know he's gone this episode.
Right. Any time that characters, and this is the thing that's incredibly obvious if you pay attention to any TV show or movie that's come out in the last 50 years. Anytime that you have a character, or worse, two characters, talking about how great everything is, or how they're happy, yeah. or when something goes right, inevitably, that's an indication that that person is going to be taken out.
Oh, yeah. There might be a jump scare in that scene.
Right.
Like, because you've had the temerity to believe that everything's going to be great.
So anyway, yeah. I think there was so much of a setup of that, mm-hmm. which is, I think, what you were getting at, is that, and so little of that actually happened. I mean, we did have a couple people die. Jorah died. We don't know what's up with that one, the wildling guy with the great red beard.
Tormund.
Yeah.
Tormund, Giant's Bear.
Yes. And so we don't know where he is. We don't know.
I hate how much I've learned about this show.
I'm
not an expert,
missing.
But I can't believe even how much I've retained about
well, you
this
have a
goddamn show.
You have a fantastic memory. Let's just put
I
that
do
out
not,
there. You do.
I do not. But so, no, we love Tormund.
Yeah.
He wants to know if the big woman is there.
That's right.
Like, we love him.
Yes.
We love Lyanna Mormont. Like, you know, she's like, you know. But like, who died? Lyanna died?
Yes.
Like, in a wonderful giant eye stabbing yes. incident. And I don't know if that was 1-1. It might have been my favorite giant. I'm not sure. But anyway, she takes out a giant with an eye stab. Use the pointy end, you know? And so, yeah, that was the setup. And we also knew as viewers, or suspected as viewers, not least because everybody kept talking about it, that this was very likely to be a rout. In the sense of, like, these are probably... maybe hundreds of thousands of tireless warriors who are up against, you know, some people in a castle with dragonglass.
Right.
Like, what are you going to do with Aerys
right,
against
right.
that many people? Right. That was the setup for sure.
You know, I thought the one thing I want to comment on is when this battle is about to begin, you have this wonderful silence. There isn't tons of music playing. There isn't tons of conversation. It's just... that very much that anticipation, I thought they captured it.
Many minutes of just facial expressions of like, here's our friends, like waiting for the thing to happen.
Right. And that is so, I mean, even when you're doing something in your own life that's not as big as an epic battle where everyone could be killed and the fate of humanity is at stake.
I don't get that more than a couple times a month. Yeah.
But there is that kind of quiet nervousness and anticipation. And I thought it was palpable, and I thought they did a great job of capturing it. And then this magical... And this is where we can, I think, maybe segue into the issue that a lot of people had with not being able to see anything in the whole damn episode. But
Melisandre?
Yeah, Melisandre came in and lit all of the swords in the Dothraki. And when they took off...
I kept thinking, I said to Madeline, like, you think they might have wanted a heads up that that was coming so they could maybe practice with the flaming swords?
Yeah, like,
I'm not sure. Even if I was good with a scimitar, I'm not sure having one on fire would be something I'd be great at using on a moment's notice.
And it didn't do any good either, because I loved when they showed them out there.
Great effect. It was a great effect.
And you just see the lights going out.
That
and then just the horse comes running back. Oh my God.
So, like, it didn't require, I mean, I'm not here to beat up on CGI, but like, that did not require like hundreds of CGI zombies falling from the sky for its effect. It was a basic, not basic, but like, it was a simple and subtle cinematic effect. And when you first saw that V shape moving north, I just said to my wife, we're allowed to curse on here, right?
Of course.
I turned to Madeline and I was like, oh, they are so fucking dead.
Yes.
And we're going to see the torches go out. Yep. We're going to see that. And it happened. It was still so affecting. Ugh,
so good.
One of the best, I feel like one of the best effects in the show. And it was.
Well, and it just, it held, it was this interesting mechanism to, at the same time, show that the battle has started, but also not really tell you anything or show you anything and keep you literally in the dark for even longer. It was amazing.
And, yeah, and then, I mean, basically what do you see first? You see some guys and horses running back.
Right.
And like, it's funny because the first thing is you're like, oh shit.
Right.
These are the fearless guys.
Well,
that's what I was going to say. When the swords go out, you're like, oh, that's not good. Cause these guys, what do we know about the Dothraki? Like, they're real good fighters. Like they're like whole like agent of chaos approach to fighting. But then the other thing is, oh my God, if a Dothraki is running back, like sprinting away from a fight, it's like, oh no, like that's so bad.
Right. It's like when Sansa went down into the crypt and everyone's looking at her. She's like, no, I'm just down here to chill out.
So like, good. And she's holding it together. Like, yep.
Everything's
good. She wasn't
going to
say everything's fine. Yeah. But then you're like, okay, let's bring on the Unsullied. And they're like, oh boy. Oh, lucky us.
You know, one of the things I think you said in the chat was like pretty much all of our friends survived. You know, like, is that a little unlikely? You know, maybe there were a lot of people who were dying. There were a lot of people who survived.
But Sam in particular. I mean, it got to a point where like there have been so much, like, to jump forward a little bit. We don't need to recap this because people have seen it or don't care. But, you know, the zombies breach the wall, breach the flame trench.
Yeah.
In a kind of obvious way by like making a bridge. I actually said to Madeline, like, they're totally going to make a body bridge, and boom, they did that. And when they got to the point where they were at the walls, and it's like, oh God, like we have a siege weapon. Well, this is basically a siege weapon defense, and we are not going to be able to fight these guys melee style at scale.
Right.
Like, that's going to be real. Unless you're Arya, it's going to be very, very difficult. And so like, but the thing was like, once they got in and they start dropping in, and like the entire courtyard is filled with zombies, more zombies are falling. And like, how many times, saying what I've heard on other shows, to be honest, but like, how many times did we see Sam, like, what's his name on The Walking Dead? Like, when he falls in the dumpster and you're like, oh my God. And you're like, Sam's not like the greatest fighter. He's a, you know, he's a librarian. He's a scholar. Could he be fending off that many people like on his back?
Right.
Jamie, who you can barely see, is up against the wall.
Yeah, right.
Brienne is up. Brienne's already gotten her ass beat.
Right.
Like, should have been dead twice.
Yeah, there was like
in this episode.
Both of them sort of being taken down by the horde, and they were still there.
It was like A Hard Day's Night with zombies.
Right.
And you're like, Paul is not going to survive this, you know? They're up against the wall. They should be fucking dead. That's insane.
A Hard Day's Night with zombies.
He's a very clean old man.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, like, but like, and like, I don't want to say I'm disappointed. Like, I loved it.
No, I loved it. I thought it was great. I loved everything about
Brienne
it.
Brienne is the most like honorable knight on the show.
Yeah.
Like, she's the best. She's just like, when Jamie knights her and you're like, yes, she does all those things. She does protect people. Like, she does that. She has done that all along. She's good to her word. Like, she does all the good knight things. But like, I won't say I'm disappointed, but on the other hand, I was like, oh, I don't know. Like, you know, I hate to say this, but my thinking brain kind of went, this doesn't make sense. There's like six people fighting a tireless zombie army and they're like not dead. They're not exhausted. Like in something like Battle of the Bastards, one of the things I love was you could just see the level of exhaustion.
Yeah. Yep.
And that one part, I think it was John, where like the bodies are piling up on top of him and then the sound gets muffled. It's so shockingly effective. You know what I mean? But you know, it's not like you can't swing a sword like that for a long time.
Oh, I have a sword. Exhausting. I have a sword right here, and I can tell you that it's very heavy. And
if you've got like, I'm sorry, I'm just being a, you know,
no, God, this is what we're doing the show for.
If you've got a big ass sword and you swing it some, like it's gonna really, it's let alone. Anyways, so yeah, I mean that part of it was like weird. And like, I guess we should get to some of the thing that everyone's talking about. And again, like I said to you this morning, like I had to like basically shut off the internet until I had a chance to watch
this. Oh, absolutely.
And then when I did, we watched it. I didn't know what other people thought, but like, you know, of course we're watching it and thinking like, wow, this is, let's be honest, like it's pretty hard to follow compared to other like classic battle scenes. The defining thing about a classic battle scene is you know what people are doing, where they are, and who's who. I didn't know which dragon was which because now they're in a CGI snowstorm. And right. Then you've got like all the zombies start falling and here comes HBO's artifacts. Like I have a pretty well, like pseudo John Syracuse approved, like calibrated TV.
Right.
And like I said to you, your choices with this one are you either get a TV that's not calibrated and you can't see anything, or you get a TV that is calibrated and you see the ridiculous number of artifacts and noise in this stream, especially when it's like zombie time. And that was frustrating because I didn't know who was alive or dead. Like, am I supposed to intuit that Sam just died? Oh no, he's fine over here now.
Right.
Cause he's got a knife. Or like, you know, they're just all, especially with the dragon stuff, which I don't know. I you know what? I liked this episode and I sound like I didn't, but like the dragon stuff was, it got silly. It just got, and like I said to you this morning, like there's that one scene where all the whites, you know, climb on the dragon mm-hmm. and he starts shaking them off. And it looks like 1960s Ray Harryhausen and not in a positive
way.
Oh
God.
I mean, yeah, it looked like a Hercules movie from the 60s. I don't know. But I, a lot of people have said,
I didn't
speculated.
Get, I mean, I didn't, take that away. I mean, there is some truth to what you say, but I didn't come away with quite that extreme of a reaction to that.
Were you able to follow? Like, I'm like,
no,
honestly, like,
following
were you
it
able
was
to follow?
Tough.
No, but I mean, like with the dragon stuff, were you able to follow like
which,
you know,
dragon was which and who was attacking
which
who?
Is which, who's who, like where they are, like what they're doing? Did that mostly make sense?
No, not really.
It's okay if it did.
No, not really. The dragon fight was really hard because, first of all, we haven't seen, I don't know how many total minutes we've seen of dragons in Game of Thrones, but it can't be more than 5-10 minutes throughout.
It's actually a compilation.
Is there?
My kid, of all the dragon scenes. Yeah.
But
I mean, the dragons were, to use the classic example, the dragons were Jaws. Like,
right.
Where, like, what made Jaws effective, or what makes... what can make some kinds of monsters in movies effective is how little you see them. So that when you do see them, it's very effective. And like, you know, like a lot of people said after the whole, like, let's ride dragons for 10 minutes. I felt a little dragon fatigue in the previous episode.
Yeah.
But like, yeah. A little dragon goes a long way and you should be wanting more, you know, but, sorry, I cut you off.
No, that's fine. I think they're, you know, it was tough to see which dragon was which. You couldn't see who was riding which dragon. The only obvious giveaway, especially when they were doing the sort of far off shots, was which, if or when the dragons were breathing fire, if the fire was the ice dragon or if it was a regular mm-hmm. dragon. And that was really the only giveaway. Like when they were attacking each other and there was a close up that kind of showed one of their claws raking against the other one and ripping flesh, I don't know which one was getting ripped. The
yeah,
only
it was I mean, and like in terms of storytelling, like I'm certainly not the most careful viewer, but like I'm pretty sure one dragon survived, but like I'm not sure what happened to the other one.
Like, yeah, I think it's fine. I think all the two non-zombie dragons are fine, or will recover, even though they got, you know, beat up. They seem to heal just fine. But there's an article that I found in Vox by Alex Ward, which I'll put into the After Dark show notes, which they went and talked to, and I won't like read the whole thing here, but they went and talked to two military experts, Ryan Grauer, an associate professor of international affairs at the University of Pittsburgh, and Mick Cook, an Australian combat veteran who fought in Afghanistan, and they're interviewed and they talk about basically how shitty the plan, the Danny and
the, like, execution, yeah, the plan and the execution.
Yeah, how everything was just bad about it, and there's no way that it would have won. And they bring up some obvious points, and I'll add that to the show notes. Let's see if I can. Nah, I can't do it from here, but I'll add that one in. Then I also saw another.
I mean, kind of like setting. I mean, did they talk about the ludicrousness of the brand plan and how it was hatched? It's like this guy over here, he has this one idea because he's the three-eyed raven.
Right.
Goes, oh yeah, that's a good plan. Let's do that.
Yeah, and I, my favorite part is like when he's like, "I'm gonna go now," and then he rolls his eyes up and like, but it wasn't clear to me.
What was he? I
mean,
he wargs into the Raven, but it's like what? I was screaming at Madeline. I was like, he's a goddamn CB radio. He should be telling people like what's
right.
happening. Like, will it be revealed? Like, you know, as one podcast says, was he watching his stories? Like, what was he doing when he had to just go away for
Well,
a while?
It's one of my favorite Simpson episodes is the one with Leonard Nimoy in it where they're building the mag train thing. And at the end, and he says, Leonard Nimoy's there and he says, my work is done here. And I forget which character says to him, you didn't do anything.
You didn't do anything.
And he says, didn't I?
Didn't I?
And
yeah.
Then he beams up. And like, it was like that. It's like, what were you doing? It showed him warg into the Ravens. The Ravens are flying up. I thought, okay, he's going to like merge with the zombie dragon and take it over and use
he'll,
it.
He'll warg into the Night King and like do the thing. Cause of course there's a rumor, like, is he the Night King?
Right.
But like, yeah, exactly.
No. And I don't think he
or
is
like,
the Night
warg
King.
Into a goddamn dragon.
Do something. You know? Do anything.
I don't know how that stuff works. I don't know how the magic part of it. But you're absolutely right. And like, you know, you just knew all along, poor Theon, you knew he was going to be going down. Mm-hmm. But then he like does the thing and he's running with the spear.
I liked it. Like, I thought, you know, we knew that he had a karmic debt to pay.
Yes.
And this was a great way for him to do that.
He's done some shitty stuff. He's no Ramsay Bolton, but like he's done some shitty stuff.
and so... You know, I think the way that his like story was wrapped up, I thought it was pretty mm-hmm. good. I thought what Bran yeah. said to him was pretty good.
I love the it was last season. I love the fight on the beach.
Oh yeah, it was great.
Do you remember that?
Yes,
that was so great. And I was like, I didn't know he had it in him, but like that was so great.
It was
like,
great.
He wants to. I mean, maybe like. Why do I always forget his name? Mormont. Maybe like Jorah.
Jorah.
He's like, you know, I've got red on my ledger. Like,
right.
There's stuff I need to like.
But the way Jorah off. Died was exactly, and I don't know if you watched the like after the episode thing
no,
that they
HBO.
You know, it was a pretty good one. And one of the things that either the writer or showrunner guy, one of the two of them said is that like, this is probably the way Jorah would have wanted to die, protecting his queen to the last, mm-hmm. you know? And so I thought that he got a good sign off too. And also, I love fortitude and I love, Dan Anderson is the actor. I'm looking up his name. I have to click to the thing and then I have to click to the other thing. And then it says, somewhere on here, Richard Dormer. Thank you. Richard Dormer, who plays the guy that keeps coming back to life with the eye patch and the flaming sword.
Oh, Beric.
Beric, yeah. And so he's also Dan Anderson, Sheriff Dan from Fortitude. I loved him.
Oh, I didn't know. Is he American?
No, he's Irish, maybe.
Oh yeah, I love him.
He's fantastic, and he has the best beard in cinema.
And he had such an, again, like I buy what his role was.
Right. He kept getting brought back just so that he could do this one thing. Melisandre kept living so she could do this one thing. And their Lord of the Light, the fire guy.
Arya had years and years of specific training.
Right.
She used that move.
Right.
Against Brienne
in
their little fake fight. Like that's one of her moves.
Right. Hold on. I have an excellent link I'm going to send to you now. Hold on, give me one sec. I'm clicking. Here you go. Check that out. That is a little video of Aria and Brienne practicing the move.
Oh, wow.
This is so cool. And then here's another, I'll put all these in the show notes so that people can play along at home. And this one is another behind the scenes Night King attack. Arya doing her jump.
Where did she learn that?
Yeah. But all of those things I think were, you know, there's so much fun. Fun elements in this episode and things that I think people will be talking about forever. And the last one I'll put is it is a shot of Bran saying, "I'm going to go now." And then it shows a shot of him with his eyes rolled up, and it's the text for it is "when the edible hits."
Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
I just need to go have an orange slice now.
But you know, I don't know. I think it's, I thought it was a really good episode. I'm really intrigued also because we're, what, halfway through the season now, right? Three more episodes left.
Yeah. And no, I think it's two.
Two is all that we only get five?
I believe so.
There's only five. Don't tell me that.
Well, and spoiler, the last episode is directed by this guy, by the fight guy.
Oh, yeah?
So, see, I mean, the inevitable, as we know from the prophecy, like, you know, Cersei's next. You know, Brown Eyes was Walder Frey.
Oh, crap. There's only five episodes.
Green Eyes is going to be Cersei, presumably.
No, there's six.
Are there?
Yeah.
Okay. So maybe there's two more.
You know, I never thought, and maybe I'm still wrong and we'll still find this out, but I'll go on the record and say, I never thought Bran was the Night King. I always thought they were two separate ones. Now, wouldn't it be interesting if that was twisted somehow to show that they were like there was something else there, but I never thought that. I heard people saying that all the time. I also expected as probably
there's a lot. That's the thing, is if you watch all of the mini YouTube videos, there are super interesting connections to it's so confusing, the White Walkers,
right,
with the color,
right,
and the Whites, which are the skeletons.
Right.
But there's all kinds of connections through Brandon the Builder and like all this stuff with making the wall and making Winterfell and why there always has to be a Stark at Winterfell. Mm-hmm. Like, is that just a line? Like, what does that mean? And there's all this stuff about like, and like the charm or curse on, like a charm basically on Winterfell. Anyway, that's one reason I think people speculate is there is material there to indicate that there's a reason that they're in the north and all of this stuff happens.
Yes, yes.
But anyway, go ahead.
I was just commenting on that. One thing I also found is something that it's like a screenshot from a Reddit discussion or something. Mm-hmm. And somebody on the Game of Thrones subreddit, I think the person's name is Apple Soap with two P's, says, John screamed at the undead dragon to distract it so Arya can run past and kill the Night King. The undead dragon was protecting the entrance to the Godswood. Watch it again and you can actually hear him scream, "Go, go, go." 10 seconds later in the scene, you can see the hair of a White Walker flying up when Arya sprints past the group of White Walkers.
I did not get that.
John once again was ready to sacrifice himself to kill the Night King. Prove me wrong. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know if that's accurate or not, but it was obvious that to me anyway, or it seemed like John was trying to get to the Godswood to fight or kill the Night King. And I was not aware that Arya was on her way there. I think they did a really good job of making you forget about her and what was going on with her.
You knew she was up to something.
You knew it, but
she's reminded of the thing from Melisandre, and she's like, "Oh, sorry, gotta bolt.
Right.
I gotta bounce. There's a thing I have to go do."
Right.
Yeah. That's
and when true. she said, you know, brown eyes, green eyes, blue eyes.
Yeah.
To me, that was pretty obvious. But I thought the way they put it together was really good. And again, like, you know, we've invested years in this show and these characters. We've seen them grow up. And so I'm, you know, I don't, I feel like I don't understand, and maybe you can enlighten me. And this is the last thing that I had on my list of things to talk to you about. Yeah. What is it that so many people are upset about when it comes to, now for me, the episode was very dark, and part of the reason why is because I'm a nerd and I wear blue block glasses over my regular glasses at night when I watch TV to cut out the blue light. It seems to make a difference in the way I sleep, or it's a placebo. I don't care. It works.
Yeah.
So like for me, it was dark and I kept having to peek out under the glasses so that I could see what was actually happening half the time. But aside from that, it seems like a lot of people have trouble with HBO stuff in particular being a lot of artifacts and a lot of, you know, I guess there's other words for it. But it if you haven't experienced this yourself, the artifacts usually come in the form of like pixelated or blockiness, right? Or when they show blacks, dark blacks, that it will look sort of pixelated and blocky. And am I describing it right?
Yeah. I mean, like I'm not a scholar of this, but like, and it's something I don't notice with every show. I don't notice it when I'm watching Veep, another fantastic show. I don't notice it. I notice it with Game of Thrones. Maybe partly because it's kind of dark, but like the dark, setting aside the darkness, like I say, if you're calibrated, right, if you've done the THX tune-up test that John Siracusa recommends, which is a good idea, you will be able to see the dark things. It will be difficult. This is unimpeachably, this is a like Godfather 2 level of dark, like so dark.
Yeah.
Right. What's the guy's name? What's the cinematographer? But he said he shot that in such a way that you could not move one stop in either direction without grossly overexposing the wedding or underexposing, you know, the Godfather, you know, in the house or whatever. I mean, like I said to you also, like the last hearth scene before they find the boy on the wall the week before was like, my wife and I were laughing. It's like, this is insane. Like we're in literally a dark room. Jason Snell said he had to put a towel under a door to be able to see what was going on. It was really, really dark. So as far as the artifact stuff, like, what I get is, and I cannot tell you why this happens. My guess is they're cheaping out a little bit on bandwidth, which everybody does to some extent, but you really see it on a show like this. You don't get these same artifacts in this way, I feel, from like an iTunes movie. But anyway, yeah, what I get is almost a kind of, there's not as much, certainly as much sharpness. You don't get a true progressive versus interlaced feeling. You get like weird, like motion stuff, but mainly it just looks a little bit dull and snowy. And you do see these problems more in dark scenes, but it can also be in light scenes. There's classic difficult problems that just I as a consumer can recognize. Like you can see like, you know, for example, like, oh, you know, when you see water in a movie that's not streaming well, or you see like, you know, leaves blowing around, like you can see all this, or you watch like a wonderful movie called Hero. Have you ever seen the movie Hero? Highly recommended. Like, I don't want to say kung fu movie because it's more than that, but like there's lots of scenes with tons of leaves. And you see that like, oh, there's weird trails and JPEG-y kind of artifacts. I see that. And like I've said for years now that like HBO, we'll know HBO has solved the problem of streaming quality when their famous HBO logo looks good. Because HBO's logo used to look bad on your little TV because your little TV sucked. Now you got a great TV. You got a fast connection. But like, guess what? They picked a logo of literal random static noise. You know the logo? The HBO like bug? Yeah. And it's like, and it kind of looks like shit because it's random noise. And like, it's like hilarious to me that like that kind of stuff sort of highlights the problem. And yeah, that's what I get. It's not excruciating. But again, as I said to you this morning, this is why I bought the box set of seasons 1 through 7 on Blu-ray.
Right.
Because like it looks Blu-ray. Because it looks really, really, really good in Blu-ray. So I don't know what the answer is, but, and I don't think they suffer. I'm like, John Oliver's just going to be John Oliver,
right?
Regardless of streaming quality.
Right.
But on a show like this, you really do notice it. And it's one reason, as I've said, we also have the Miyazaki Blu-rays. So if we're going to watch Ponyo, you can be for damn sure we're going to watch the Blu-ray. Mm-hmm. Because, like, if I stream that from my Plex, the artifacts of Bubbles and lots of tiny goldfish sisters is going to look really, really weird and you know, blurry.
Yeah. I and this is the weird thing. Either I'm too dumb to notice these problems, or I don't care about them because I don't see this a lot. And I don't know if it's because, like, is this something that's dependent upon the streaming service? Is it dependent upon the area? Am I seeing something?
Yeah, are you on a good CDN?
Right. Am I seeing something different from what you're seeing? I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, so much varies with TVs and, like, how people like it to be set, how close they sit. Are they wearing orange plastic glasses while they watch it?
Right.
Like, there's so many different reasons why it could look a certain way. But, like, I don't know. I mean, I'm not. This is probably the most boring way we could end this. But, like, when I watch an iTunes movie,
yeah.
If I watch The Incredibles,
yes.
And sit, and it's streaming, it's bought it on iTunes, I sit real close to the screen, boy, whew, it looks really, really good. Really, really sharp.
Yeah.
Spider-Man, Into the Spider-Verse, as we've said, like, looks way better than I expected. It's so sharp and so poppin', especially on a UHD,
right.
4K TV. But yeah, I don't know. It's when you say why people are mad, like, you think why people are mad about the way it looked or of, like, how the episode went?
How it looked. People complaining, saying, oh, it was too dark. Yes, it was pretty dark. But we were saying before, that's probably, you know, to create the atmosphere, to help us as viewers experience some of what they were experiencing by being in the dark.
There's even fan theories about that.
Really?
Yes. There are fan theories about, for example, is it Last Hearth? Well, I think it's Last Hearth. Wherever they, like, meet up, previous episode, where they meet up with the guys from the Watch and, like, and he goes, oh, no, I've always had blue eyes. Mm-hmm. You know, that scene in the hallway was, I mean, I could barely see any shapes. I was wearing glasses and stuff, and I could barely see any shapes. But then what happens, Beric lights up his sword, and now you've got a torch.
Mm-hmm.
And ditto with when Melisandre lights up the swords. There are people, I'm not saying I agree with this, but there are people who say, like, that's the point. Like, that there's a point to, like, stuff in the show becoming this basically the source of lighting.
Right.
And I might be saying that wrong, but, like, that doesn't make a ton of sense to me. You know, but yeah. I mean, who knows? You brought it. We should probably dash. And I think my fuzz is going to be here in a minute, but you said something kind of interesting this morning. Not kind of interesting. You said something interesting this morning. Like, will the knowledge of this affect how people make stuff? Like, if they know, you know, classic stuff where, like, people started saying, you know, 5 or more years ago, well, more and more, when you make a YouTube video, you need to assume that somebody's going to watch it on a device.
Right.
You know,
right.
Only the olds like me watch YouTube on a giant screen. So, like, think about, like, having more, like, headshot, you know, talking head in the middle of the screen really big. Like, you can't, it's difficult to watch Terrence Malick or, like, Coppola on a small screen.
Yes.
Or, as you said, especially Kubrick, like, the effect of the war room in Dr. Strangelove is going to come across very differently
right.
on a phone.
Of course.
Than it would on a big screen. Or, like, you know, or obviously, you know, a 2001.
Absolutely. I think that there is something to be said. And this is what we were texting about, is that Kubrick would flip out if the color correction was not right on a poster for one of his movies. Forget the movie right. itself, even just the poster. And that my understanding is that he was incredibly, I don't know what the right word is, you know, retentive or controlling about exactly how all of his stuff was played in theaters. It had to be right. And he would intend.
Here's his letter to projectionists about how to show Barry Lyndon. He had a whole, like, letter that was included with the film.
Yes.
An infinite amount of care was given to the look of Barry Lyndon, the photography that sets the costumes, and in the careful color grading and overall job quality of the prints, et cetera. So that all this stuff, like, you know, describing exactly the aspect ratio, there should be no less than 15 foot Lamberts of light on the screen and no more than 18 You know, the first half of the film runs for another night, describes all of this. There's an intermission, like basically prepping them, like how to get this right.
Right.
He's super careful.
And, you know, I know we can't talk about Woody Allen anymore, but Woody Allen
we canceled him.
Yes. But he used to be incredibly, you know, like opposed to removing letterboxing. From movies and when they would be showed on TV back in the days that everybody had a 4x3 CRT television and nobody understood and that seeing a letterbox effect would mean something was wrong with your TV, right. That everything was letterboxed. Everything was pan and scan back then.
Do you remember watching James Bond movies? How bad the pan and scan
so
was?
Bad because they would do these huge wide shots. And so like he wouldn't.
And they'd have to Goldfinger is way on the right. James Bond just went left. You get this like weird pan.
Very
to,
weird.
Like, move between them. It was really
especially
bad.
In the conversation where they're going back and forth between them or they're cutting off 50% of each of their faces to try and get them both in the shot. And, you know, so like there's this long history of that kind of thing, but now we know like these things are meant and built to be watched at home on a TV. And it's so, I don't know how many million variables there are when you're watching something in a movie theater, but I would think that movie theaters overall are going to have a more consistent experience than people's TVs at home are going to have. And that's interesting to me because what do you do in response to that? Do you start changing how you film stuff, knowing that it's going to be watched at home? You know, I think that's pretty interesting.
I do too. And I mean, if you think about some shows that pay off for careful visual attention, one that's failing me right now, but like, you know, even with Game of Thrones, there are people who are like noticing tiny, tiny, tiny little things on screen. And like, if you know, like this needs to look good on an airplane, like you're going to think about that blocking and lighting probably really differently. Cause you know, you don't normally want to have a cutaway to like go. So, here's the thing you're supposed to notice. You know what I mean? Like there's all kinds of stuff like that, that, you know, you're going to have to think about. I don't know. I think it's a very interesting question. Cause like, who knows what comes next, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. My food's going to be here in a second. So still excited about the show.
Still excited about the show.
Me
very
too.
Much.
I want to know what's going to happen with, I want to know. I hope there's plenty of time to work out the politics. Cause that's why I'm here. I don't watch Survivor for the puzzles. I watch it for the arguing and strategizing.
There you go.
And like, I'm here for like what happens with how we govern. Very interested in how that works out. There's a reason we made you king in the North. We don't care if you want to be the king, but we know you're the guy we trust. When you bring in the blonde lady, we have concerns because then there's the other blonde lady.
That's right. Let's go over here. Well, you can't have two. They fight each other.
There can only be one.
There can be only one.
It's like Sith Lords, you can have two, right?
Yes, two.
They come in pairs like DNA.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you for listening to this very special episode of Back to Work After Dark. As always, you can find all the wonderful shows, all the great shows at 5x5.tv.
Beautiful. And I will be making sure everything we talked about is in the show notes for this episode, which is going to be 5x5.tv/... hold on. I don't even know what episode it is. After Dark /530.
All right. Sounds good.
Thank you,
Merlin. All right, Jacaris.
Bye.
Bye.